Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 9 p.m. and that is British summer time. And I'm recording from my home in Ireland. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting over the last couple of days was to observe just how few people there are around. Now, just I guess anyone who's not from this region probably isn't familiar with Killarney, but the reality is it's one of the tourist capitals of Ireland, and I made enough money every summer from doing boat trips on the lakes to work my way through college, so I didn't have to work during the term. So that I think would probably be a reasonable measure of just how many people generally arrive during the summer months into this area. It's incredibly scenic, and the entire region is fitted out for the tourist industry. So the Eurostoxx 600 Travel and Leisure Index has been basically going sideways for the last 8 years. And obviously, we've had a couple of big surprises along the way where you've had some swinging downtrends. And it is attempting, at least, to trend higher over the last 8 or 9 months. But the thing that has really surprised me is how few people there are, because normally the center of the town is heaving with people at this time of the year, and it is deserted today. And that is most particularly odd because the race festival is on right now, and today was Ladies' Day, so that would normally attract very large crowds. Now, I will be the first to admit that it's a little chilly today, but the reality is that there was plenty of people at the races, but nowhere near the kind of traffic that one would normally associate. So there's only two conclusions one can draw. The first is that perhaps the pandemic has had a significant effect on the local economy in terms of tourist numbers. But then there's also the additional fact that Ireland is a very close destination for British tourists. And with all of the uncertainty right now and the fear of inflation, and on top of that, the pressure that's coming to bear on families, it's worth considering that it is mostly families travel during the summer months. And elderly people have the luxury of time, so generally, then you'll see older people taking advantage of lower accommodation prices to travel outside of the summer months or the summer holidays for the schools. So, in order to rescue this the season this year, they're really praying that things are going to pick back up again in September. What, of course, that also helps to highlight it is that it is families are really struggling with this uptick in mortgage rates in the UK. So I think when we think then about the big picture view, well, this being Friday, it is the big picture audio and video. And let's just think then about, well, what has been the defining characteristic of the last 15 or 16 years? It has been that central banks would ride to the rescue at any sign of trouble. They're inhibited from doing that today because of fears around inflation. Now, when we think about inflation, well, let's just look at a few of those measures. So, just simply CPI year over year, not looking at any fancy measure of it, it has come down very abruptly. So, it was close to 9% in the middle of last year, and it's a lot closer to 3% today, and it continues to trend lower. Now, we also know that the USA has positive real interest rates. When CPI is at 3% and the short-term interest rate is north of 5%, well, that's a pretty significant carry. And UK CPI is also now starting to behave. So it peaked out a lot closer to 11%, and now it's below 8%. It hasn't been as reactive to the pace of the Bank of England raising rates, but then again, the Bank of England hasn't been as aggressive in raising rates. So, when we think then about the base rate, we're up to 5%, and That's a new phenomenon. So the Bank of England was a little bit slower in raising rates, but they're getting there. That has helped to improve the outlook for the currency. So the Bank of England playing catch up has certainly lent some support to the pound, but it's now in the middle of the overhead trading range, and I think that we are getting some consolidation. We may even see an unwinding of the very short-term overbought condition. But now the big question is, and I think this is by far the most important question for from the perspective of the long-term investor. Have central bankers been sufficiently chastened to contain themselves when it comes to the assistance they provide during a growth shock? Now, I think this is far and away the most important question there is. If they decide that, and this, of course, would be very similar to the kinds of decisions that were made in the early 1970s. In the late 1960s, we had a social revolution. And arguably, we are in the throes of a social revolution. And I don't want to get myself into trouble by expressing my views on some of those social issues, but the reality is that this is a social revolution. And obviously, I think there were real social issues that needed to be dealt with all the way through from the late 1950s through to the late 1960s. They were addressed. Now, successfully or not, or the progress that was made subsequently, that those are non-market topics. But I think we are in a social revolution right now. And that resulted in governments printing a great deal of money and attempting to placate a restive population. And we've seen exactly the same thing in during the pandemic and I think arguably leading up to it. And the Trump tax cuts were also aimed at appeasing a restive population because there was a growing number of people who had been left up by the wayside as globalization became a dominant feature right across the global economy, and they rebelled at the ballot box. So then we've had a massive fiscal expansion in an already mature bull market from about 2017 to 2019. Then we had the pandemic, and we had an even bigger fiscal and monetary accommodation. That was as much in panic at the excess death rate in the initial phases of the pandemic as it was at the social unrest that was being caused or could have been caused. Then inflation took off, and that's also what happened in the early 1970s. It was inflation taking off that was probably the causal factor behind the Gulf states rebelling and demanding that they get a higher price for their oil because the dollars that they were being paid in were losing value really quite quickly. So then Nixon closed the gold window, gold prices took off, and we really that I think just helped to illustrate just how much inflation had already occurred. So now we're in a situation where inflation has been high, as high or it's been higher than it has been in decades, and the total debt burden of the global economy is a lot higher than it was. So we've had a really incredible advance in the growth sector in response to enthusiasm around artificial intelligence. And now the big question is when we do see that the rising interest rates eventually taking a toll on growth, well, on economic growth, then what will be the response of central banks? Because if they go off and print, and let's put up the total assets of central banks chart. Now, it does take a long time to load, but the one thing that we know is that every time there's been a problem, it has multiplied, and particularly the size of the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. It has multiplied every time there's been a problem. And usually we get a double. So you get some kind of process of mean reversion, and that is still underway. We've seen a significant contraction in the total assets of central banks over the course of the last 18 months. Even though stock markets have been rising, the total assets sitting on central banks has been contracting. Every time there's been a pause, then we've seen a multiplication factor subsequently. And this trend really accelerated in 2020, all the way through to the peak in 2022. And an acceleration is a trend ending. So it is very relevant now to ask the question, are they going to print as much as they have in the past? I think the two things that are particularly relevant is not only that the Federal Reserve was so willing to inflate the size of their balance sheets, but that they were willing to leave that money in the system for a prolonged period of time. And we can see here that on each of the occasions, each of the occasions we've had a crisis, then we've had these multiplications in terms of the size of the balance sheet. And every time they've tried to withdraw, then they've had to really act with a great deal of enthusiasm to massively reflate. So we're back in this quantitative tightening environment. And the most logical scenario is that it's going to create a deflationary shock. And then we'll be presented with this choice for central bankers. Are they going to multiply the size of their balance sheet again? Well, when we look at the NASDAQ, or I think let's probably look at one of the more overextended of those shares, the NVIDIA, where it has gone vertical over the course of the last 6 months. Well, it could pull back by 40%, and then it would still only be in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, we have started to see a little bit of loss of momentum over the course of the last couple of months, and then also news that companies are looking at substitution, that you have companies like Google and Apple and several others looking at creating or designing their own chips. You also have Google's DeepMind using AI and artificial intelligence and deep learning to design chips faster. So NVIDIA's hold on the market will be very much tied to their ability to design even better chips, but there will be a really significant race on. And it is quite problematic when your biggest customers start competing with you for their business. So NVIDIA is very overbought and does look likely that it will decline. But then we can think about the very significant advance we've seen in the stock market over this year so far. And the NASDAQ has pretty much unwound all of the decline in 2022 from the low in October. And now we're getting a little bit of pause and consolidation here. But this has not been because earnings went up. And it's much more because we have a great deal of confidence in the market that the central bank, when trouble does eventually arise, that they're going to print and that they're going to re-engage with quantitative easing. They're going to massively inflate the size of the balance sheet. They're going to make abundant liquidity available to anyone who wants it. And most particularly, they're going to cut interest rates to the bone and then leave them down there for a prolonged period. And that might sound like an aggressive move, but that is exactly what they've been doing on each of the occasions since the global financial crisis. But now we also have the added complication of inflation. And we've had a dalliance with modern monetary theory over the course of the last few years. And regardless of how one feels about it, it's been very clear that when one talks about modern monetary theory, the basic premise is that you can print as much money as you need, and you can fund any kind of public works program, you can fund any kind of social program just by printing the money, and it doesn't matter. And the only time it would matter is when inflation starts to become a problem. And when inflation becomes a problem, well, then you have to stop. Well, inflation has been a problem, and they have stopped. They are reducing the size of the balance sheet, and then the and I do believe that this effort to contract the rate of growth in money supply is clearly aimed at trying to get that money control problem, or trying to get money control under control, money under control. But it is only a very mild contraction so far in the supply of actual money in the system. And we are beginning to see straws in the wind, that the consumer is under pressure. So Amazon's Prime Day was better than last year, but not as good as analysts were expecting. And defaults on auto loans continue to rise. And we can see the tourist numbers in places like Ireland, which depend on the health of the UK consumer. Then we have all of this uncertainty around inflationary pressures. Now, on the one hand, you also have the fact that you have positive real rates in the USA right now, and wage growth is rising faster than in regular inflation. And if you just take that very narrow view, well, then you should think that consumers are in really good shape. However, the bigger issue is that rent is out of control. And people aren't leaving their homes. And I'm a perfect example of that. I bought a home in May of 2021 with a 3% mortgage on a jumbo loan. And I looked at if I wanted to sell my home and I wanted to move off somewhere else and get a mortgage, just what would I be able to get? And it's basically half. I would either have to pay double the monthly mortgage rate, or I would have to accept half the house, and that's not acceptable for the vast majority of people. So a lot of people are just staying still, and that is just pushing people into new builds, and it's certainly helping the home building sector, who are selling new homes. Of course, often those new homes are really quite a long way from the center of the city, and that works fine when people get to work from home. Of course, in a recession, then employers get their power back, and that's when they can make demands on their employees that they need to work at the office and that they need to be closer. And then you start to see cities contracting. And that happens during every recession, that cities tend to contract. So, as we think then about where we are, well, money supply is contracting, but it's contracting from an exceptionally high level. And that's not having a big effect just yet. But what we are starting to see, though, is that gold has been going sideways now for 3 years. And it's right in the region of the $2,000 level. Now, this is, of course, in US dollars. And dollars were really quite strong for a good part of this time. And yet, gold prices were mostly going sideways. And the two things that gold tends to do best in are negative real rates. And we don't have negative real rates, we have positive real rates right now. But I think the most important point is not the absolute, it is the expectation. And positive real rates popped on the upside last week and then came back down again in here this week. And what I would suggest is that it isn't the absolute, it is the trend. And the trend is losing momentum. If we start to see this coming down further next week, well, then we'd be looking at a failed upside break. And I do think that we are close to the end of the interest rate hiking cycle because there is increasing evidence of stress among consumers. And the longer interest rates stay high for, the greater the stress there's going to be. I'm in two minds about the answer to that big question about what will central banks do. I think that they will cut rates and they will act aggressively to lend assistance to the economy when we do eventually get a recession. But that recession will have a clear lead indicator from the inverted yield curve turning positive. And that's not happening just yet. So we don't generally see the worst of the selling pressure in stocks until the yield curve spread is trending higher and pushing up through the zero bound. That is when the lead or the lead indicator really becomes an urgent indicator, and we're not there yet. In fact, the trend is still downwards. So investors are continuing to believe that there are still a few interest rate hikes yet to come, but considering the depth of the inversion, I think investors are also betting that we're probably pretty close to the end of the hiking cycle, and therefore much closer to the time when rates will come down and liquidity will become available once more. And then let's just look at high yield bonds. So the high yield ETF has been mostly ranging now for this year, and this week it popped back above the 200-day moving average to hit a new recovery high. Now, obviously, we'd have to hold it, but that's reasonably positive action. And we've also seen that some of those troubled private equity companies have rebounded and broken their medium-term downtrends. Now, Blackstone, for example, expects to be able to announce that they have $1 trillion under management. And Brookfield, they demerged from their asset management business in order to chase that trillion under management moniker as well. And that has also broken back above the 200-day and 1,000-day moving average, but it hasn't quite yet clearly broken the downtrend. So we're definitely getting some enthusiasm. We're getting investors willing to bet that interest rates are going to peak soon and that the looming issue with commercial property isn't going to turn into a crisis. And there are oodles of commercial properties available. And I would say that this is actually quite a good time if one has an idea for a retail opportunity, then this is really not a bad time to start thinking about what how to squeeze a commercial lender, or I guess a landlord, to get really favorable terms. And we're definitely going to see some of that. But then there will also be lots of older buildings that are just going to be difficult. And this is going to come down to local planning issues. So we're going to have to see a lot of flexibility among city officials in order to get some of these buildings back into the rental market so that they can start paying rates again. And if that happens, well, that was probably going to be really quite beneficial for the global economy. But we probably have to see some recalibration of the pricing mechanisms inside the commercial real estate sector first. I would pay particular attention to both Blackstone and Brookfield as just a clear lead indicator, or if even not even a lead indicator, but a coincident or a barometer for the commercial real estate sector. Now, Goldman analysts did a very good job of telegraphing the weak nature of their property investments ahead of their earnings this week. So the share actually rebounded. But the reality is that the asset management business has got its fingers in a lot of commercial real estate and has been acting as the hedge for a lot of hedge funds. A lot of hedge funds, I think it's almost half the hedge funds in the USA, have outsourced their hedge books to Goldman Sachs, and Goldman has put all of those hedges into commercial real estate because it's realistically the only asset class big enough to take them all. What that also suggests is that there are a lot of funds have got an exposure they probably don't understand in the commercial property sector. So when we think about what the problem will be inside of any kind of future recession, then it's these kinds of companies are the ones to keep an eye on for monitoring whether it's turning into a future problem or a now problem. Now, when we think then about how it's all going to play out, one thing that I'm paying particular attention to is the dollar index. So it got down to test the 100 level last week, and we've had a rebound in here this week, not in an especially dynamic manner, but it is certainly pausing in that 100 level and the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And of course, this is the upper side of that range that formed from 2015 through to about 2022. So it's a big area of potential support. And this really does bring us to that. Back to that question, because the dollar index is almost biblical in terms of its cyclicality. It tends to have these 7-year bull markets, 7-year bear markets, and a bit of messing around in between. And when the more back history we look at, the clearer that is. You get 7 years on the upside, 7 years on the downside, and a couple of years of messing around in between on numerous occasions, usually less messing around at the peaks than at the troughs. But we've been up now for 8 years and it's only just started to come down. If we are looking at 7 years on the downside, what that basically suggests is that perhaps the Federal Reserve will be eager to print dollars and other central banks will be less eager to print units of their own currency, and therefore the dollar would decline. Or that they will believe that they now have the answer, that they can print the money because they know that a quantitative tightening will create a deflationary outcome so that they can provide as much assistance as is required because they know how to get control of inflation. So that's really dangerous when central banks think they have all the answers. But I think that it is quite logical that they will provide assistance at the beginning of any kind of future problem. And then they will probably be less eager to keep it in. And the reason I say that is because the Bank of England had to provide assistance during the pension crisis last fall or last autumn. And they put in £400 billion of assistance practically overnight. And over the course of the next several months, they took it back out again and went straight back to quantitative tightening. Then, during the regional banking crisis in March for the USA, the Federal Reserve increased the size of its balance sheet and then subsequently has taken the money straight back out again. So, we do have evidence, at least on two occasions from two different central banks, that when a problem arises, central banks will jump to assistance and they will provide as much liquidity as is required to damp down any potential problem. But that now they are much less likely to leave that assistance in the market, and that they will get straight back to combating inflation and reducing the size of their balance sheets once the immediate danger is gone. So, the efforts that they went to rescue the regional banks in the USA, it meant that they put the full balance sheet of the Federal Reserve at risk in order to restore confidence. And it did restore confidence. We had news today that the regional banks have basically stopped the capital flight. And that has allowed the ETF to come all the way back up and test the region of the 200-day moving average. And now the other outstanding question for regional banks is that they are the biggest lenders to commercial real estate, because the logic is fairly simple. Commercial real estate tends to be a local market, and regional banks are local banks. So local banks lend to local corporate commercial real estate, and that keeps everything. It's supposed to have a knowledge base that helps to reduce risk, that locals should know what the best properties are, who the best creditors are, and that should be something that is reasonable. So, as we then think about the alternative, which would be that they repeat exactly what they've been doing so far, and that is the easy answer. And that then would mean that we'd get a further inflation of the asset price appreciation we've seen in stock markets. That stock markets would then not just pause in the region of their all-time peaks, which is basically what they're doing. If we look at the S&P 500, it has come right back up above the 4,500 level, and it's testing at the peak from back in 2021. The Dow Jones Industrials Average popped on the upside this week and hit a new recovery high and is in positive territory again. It's back above the 35,000 level for the first time in about 18 months and testing its all-time peak. If we look at the Europe Stoxx 600, then it is not all that far away from the peak from back in 2021. All of that interest in stock markets, it's not because we're getting massive earnings growth. It's pretty hard to grow earnings when the supply of money overall is contracting and interest rates have gone up by several hundred basis points in the space of just a couple of months. And then let's just look at some of those Asian markets. Australia has been ranging just below the 7,500 level for 2 years already. And the Nikkei, with the benefit of massive accommodation from the Bank of Japan, is continuing to post new highs. Now, I guess that's not strictly true. It has been consolidating of late, but that's a big breakout from a well-defined range. And it's not at a new all-time high, but it's not that far away from it either. So, as we think then about what's driving this stock market, it is certainly enthusiasm that interest rates are going to fall soon and remove one of the headwinds to the business model for asset management that has prevailed for all of the last 15 years, which is that cheap money can be deployed risk-free into risk assets, and central banks will come to the rescue if there's ever a problem. And that is the basis on which the entire bull market over the last 15 years has been predicated. And there is plenty of evidence to support it. So we have it's basically the Fed put, and investors believe that that is still very much intact. It's also why gold prices are right in the region of the upper side of their range. Investors are betting that when a recession is confirmed and deflationary forces take hold, that interest rates are going to come down with a bang. And then that is going to quickly devalue currencies and create a bullish environment for a zero-yielding asset. So gold could easily break on the upside. Now, of course, it does then beg the question, where is the epicenter of risk going to be in any future potential problem? Well, it could be commercial real estate. That is basically the dog that hasn't barked for an awfully long time. And we know that prices are really very elevated, and there are a lot of companies have been locked into really aggressive leases, and some of those at least will have to eventually declare bankruptcy. One would assume that that would show up in the high yield markets, and it could easily show up in leveraged loans. So I do think also that the total return on leverage loans is particularly worth monitoring because it's still going up. And if that eventually turns around, it will be one of the best performing portions of the bond markets, and perhaps the most or the best performing portion of the bond markets rolling over. The other potential issue could arise with China. And more than anything else, I'm paying attention right now to the high yield total return index or total return index for Chinese high yield debt, because corporate debt in China wasn't really a thing in 2006. And you can see here that the index really didn't go anywhere all the way through 2006 and 7, and it declined in 2008. And then after 2008, we had the huge amount of stimulus hit the Chinese economy, and they continued stimulating all the way through until the pandemic, and then they stopped. They decided that now was the time to try and purge the Augean stables. So what they basically did was decide, no, they're not going to spend the money. They're not going to print, they're not going to stimulate, they're not going to put the government's balance sheet at risk. Instead, they are going to try and rein in the property developers and try and mitigate some of the inflationary pressures in housing. And the net effect of that is that the corporate sector is in real problems, because if you have relied on basically free money to grow your business for years, well, when that's taken away, it becomes problematic. So this is a clear downtrend. We've had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We had a good sized rebound, and it unwound the oversold condition relative to the 1,000-day moving average, and now it is continuing lower. So there is really the potential that China is going to experience a deflation. And for an economy where it was growing at exactly 10% a year for years, and now they're trying to talk down the or tr talk down the growth expectations, well, we have the 10-year yield continuing to contract. So there's a lot of demand for Chinese bonds, even if they yield 2.6%. So what that is suggesting is that there aren't any other attractive assets that one would want to put their money into. And that's obviously problematic for an economy the size of China. The CSI 300 has been basically range bound for a decade. And today, prices are almost exactly where they were back in 2007. And of course, now they're on the way down. Back then, they were on the way up. And this does not look like a bullish chart. So we could easily see China emerge or coming into a problem. Now, one thing that I think is also worth considering is that the Chinese economy, they have really tried very hard to, I guess, increase the total value. They've tried to step up the value chain in terms of manufacturing. So they've become the leader in solar panel development. They're producing wind turbines now too. They have levered their dominance of the rare earth metals sector to also really corner the manufacturing potential for batteries. And then you also have Chinese companies that are the leaders in developing new technology for the battery sector. And all of that is on the assumption that the rest of the world is going to buy their vehicles, buy their batteries, and buy their wind, their solar panels. And of course, that is assuming that the rest of the world wants to continue to do business with China. So, this whole talk around creating a BRICS currency at the BRICS forum later, or I guess it's about a month out from a month ahead now, that is going to throw focus onto the Chinese economy and how willing China is to make concessions to try and get along with everyone else. There has been really scant evidence that China is willing to make any concessions to get along with anyone for the last 3 or 4 years. So there's no reason to anticipate that that would be the case now. And when are we going to start to see people really thinking that a BRICS currency would really be an international renminbi? Considering the volume of trade that China does with the emerging markets, then the terms of trade will be dictated by the largest of the trade partners. So I don't think China is going to ensure or going to allow a currency to be created that is going to take a big hit, toll on their economic growth potential. So when we think about where the epicenter of risk could be, well, there's the potential that it could be in China, and that the property sector could really morph into a very significant issue. When we think about the priorities of different economies, well, property is by far the most important of the asset classes in China. Bonds are the most important asset class in Europe, and stocks are the most important asset class for the USA. Well, bonds going from a negative yield to a positive yield and then a sharply positive yield are really problematic for Europe. And property prices unwinding without solving the local currency, the excuse me, the local government funding mechanisms is a real problem for China. Well, whereas so far, at least, the stock market hasn't been an issue for the USA. We've had large numbers of people retiring, and a large number of people hold themselves off from returning to the workforce, and that has contributed to a large number of open jobs in the USA. It is quite possible that the retirements of large numbers of people have been enabled by the massive asset price appreciation of their stock portfolios and their property portfolios. So any kind of setback in the stock market, particularly if it is reasonably lengthy in nature, could have a meaningful knock-on effect for the perception of health in the US economy. Over the course of the last couple of months, we've had several countries that have been bailed out or with IMF deals or World Bank deals, and they have begun to rally. So, where we've seen the debt issues either being addressed more aggressively or more responsibly, or where new IMF funding mechanisms have been put in place, we've had some recoveries beginning to take place, and generally that is can be at least can be considered to be a positive. I'm only going to look at US dollar denominated ETFs because that is really the only way that we can put into perspective just how much of a depreciation has taken place. So when we look at the Pakistan ETF, it has come down with an incredible bang and over the course of the last 3 years dropped from 30 to about 10. Then it gapped higher about 2 weeks ago, and now the big question is, will it put in a higher reaction low? Then I'm not sure that there is a Sri Lanka ETF. So I'll just redenominate the local index, and we can also then see just how much of a depreciation has occurred because of the really significant problems within the economy, but then also the rebound we've seen over the course of the last 6 months as the problems have been addressed with some better terms. Then we can definitely look at the UK, where they didn't have a debt issue, but certainly the adoption of a more conventional suite of fiscal and monetary conditions has re instilled confidence in the currency, and it has rebounded. Now, it's not like the issues are completely behind the UK, but they certainly have raised interest rates, and the currency appreciating suggests that some confidence is returning. And then we've also seen that the 10-year yield is coming back down again, having popped on the upside at the beginning of the month. It is looking increasingly likely that this is a failed upside break. Of course, we will have to see it come back down through 4% in order to confirm that. But it does look like the UK is getting its inflationary problem under control. Now, I think that Brazil is the template that we can watch for how economies begin to come out of this inflation crisis. They raised rates exceptionally aggressively, and that has contributed to the real continuing to appreciate. So it's now trending through the 1,000-day moving average. But economic growth is beginning to wane, and when we look at Brazil's CPI, then we're going to see that it was very high, and now it has contracted in a meaningful fashion. The sudden impact of very high interest rates moving from low levels to sharply positive in a short period of time has brought the inflation rate down from over 12 to 3%, and that's a success. But now the economy is starting to roll over. So as then let's just pay attention to how is GDP doing on a year-over-year basis. So we're at 4%, and that is still net positive, but it has contracted from the peak around the 12% level back in 2021. But the central bank is alert to the potential, at least, that the GDP is going to contract from here. So they're beginning to talk about cutting interest rates. And what they have wrung out of the civilian administration is a commitment that they will not be raising rates in an aggressive fashion for public employees. So that's a very significant issue, that, or at least it's a factor that's contributing to this continued effort by the central bank to ensure that inflation is brought back under control. Now, if we start to see similar actions deployed by other central banks, then I think we will have a template. We've got some evidence that they're willing to take assistance back after they've lent it quickly in order to get inflation under control. They are willing to raise interest rates aggressively to get inflation under control, and they have been willing to lend assistance when it's required, but not indefinitely. So what that is basically a recipe for is a change, and that's a very significant when we think about the history of the last several or the last decade and a half. We had bonds that just did nothing but trend higher, and subsequently we've had this really crushing decline over the last 3 years. Now the total return on the 10-year future is steadying, and I think that it is more likely than not that Treasury yields are going to go straight back up and test the 1,000-day moving average, and that could be approximately a 7 to 8% advance from where we are right now. But when we think then about what the trajectory of those bond yields is, well, it's the answer to that question is going to very much hinge on just how much money is printed, and what will the answer be? There are massive unfunded liabilities, and is the USA going to start to address some of those with fiscal constraint? Well, we're just not there yet. So it is still an enormous question. Will the central bank be more aggressive in order to force the governments to become more fiscally responsible? Or Are we going to see an environment where governments will refuse to be more fiscally responsible? And we'll see a lot more volatility. I think that probably is the most likely scenario. We might have a real threat to the independence of central banks. And I think that's potentially down the road. Or we'll have a greater control taken of private assets and private investment. We might be looking at something like that in South Africa right now, where the government is leaning more heavily on the kind of infrastructure that the miners have been put in place to ensure constant operation of their mines. And that, of course, would also mean that either they're going to raise taxes on those miners in order to bridge the funding gaps, or perhaps they would just take over those electricity generation plants from the miners and put them to use for the broader population. Now, that's obviously a massive hit in terms of the property rights and governance. We did see a similar kind of grasp by the AMLO government in Mexico. It didn't really last more than about a weekend, and the private owners of a railway had to be compensated. But that did not stop the government from actually taking it over. Now, the Mexican peso, though, continues to remain in this very clear trend, although it was a little weaker over the last couple of days. So Latin American currencies continue to show the benefits of aggressive actions to control inflation. I do think this is going to be a template, and I think that we're going to see a lot more questionable activity from central banks, and that the surety that investors have right now that we're going to remain in this pattern that's been in play for 15 years, I don't think that's what we're going to have over the next decade. I think we're going to have much sharper, shorter cycles. So we'll have uptrends that last for about a year and a half, and then we'll have some swinging declines. We're unlikely to have the big swing of an uptrend that lasts for years at a time. And obviously, we have this incredibly exciting innovation in terms of the artificial intelligence. But I'm thinking more and more about what exactly is value. And we've had a lot of discussions about that within the investment sector for the last decade, because you have to come up with a kind of a rationale to allow you to buy companies that don't make any profits. And the way that you do that is to say, well, they're creating something out of nothing. And when they do have profits, they'll be world beating. And some of those companies really do. And that's, of course, where the dominance of the Fangman companies has come in. So these companies continue to march higher. They have been by far the biggest beneficiaries of the uptrend over the course of the last 15 years. And this bull market will not end until they actually roll over in a conclusive manner. So as long as they are continuing to trend higher, I think investors are going to continue to give them the benefit of the doubt. We're going to get a big reweight of the Nasdaq. I don't think that's going to be the causal factor in a major decline, but we have rebounded to test the peak. It's very oversold, overbought in the short term, and I think it is more likely than not that we're going to see a significant reversion back down towards the mean. Ultimately, the concentration factor we get in the capitalist structure is met with the possibility of antitrust, and that will create more companies and greater opportunity. And I think that's in the future. The process of consolidation and mergers and acquisitions activity continues, particularly with the the attempts to stop Microsoft from buying Activision failing, and it does look increasingly likely that merger will go through, which will create the second largest owner of video games in the world. And I think these are trends that will not last indefinitely. The trend of consolidation, taken to its logical conclusion, would end up with one company. That's virtually impossible. It's only a matter of time before antitrust measures and efforts to break them up, I think, gather pace. And that is also likely to be part of a significant social upheaval. And that is also, I think, underway and likely to intensify as the full brunt of rising interest rates starts to bear down on consumers. I think with that, I'll leave you for the weekend, and I'll wish all the best to all of you. Good.